From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. It was one of the biggest highway projects that Kansas City, Missouri had seen in years. A 10-mile, six-lane corridor running south from the heart of the city. To widen the existing road, the construction company brought in huge earth movers and thousands of pounds of explosives to blast through the limestone hillsides. Then, early in the morning, on November 29th, 1988, a call comes in to 911.
Yes, I want to report a fire.
What about?
Two security guards working at the construction site are on the line.
Yeah, there's a fire on both sides of the highway. It's at 87th Street.
87th and 71 High. What's burning? Okay, we don't have units there. Thank you.
The 911 operator quickly notifies the fire department, and they rush a crew to the scene. Pumper truck 41.
41, dispatcher.
The firefighters spot a pickup truck in flames and a second fire.
Appears to be two arson fires out here. Send the police.
Two arson fires.
Pumper 41, please caution on your call. We have information there may be explosives. It's in a construction area.
The explosives are packed into two construction trailers. Another fire truck arrives, pumper number 30. As both crews begin to battle the flames, the battalion chief reports a powerful blast.
107 reports a major explosion. We heard it here. Firefighters are involved out of that 71 highway in 87. Apparently a large explosion. Pumper 41 or pumper 30, answer. Pumper 41 or pumper 30.
There's no answer from either crew.
Pumper 36, pumper 30.
Authorities cordon off the area. 40 minutes pass, then a second explosion rocks the site, breaking gas lines and shattering building foundations miles away. Emergency crews, investigators, and news reporters arrive as the morning sun reveals a charred landscape.
The only thing left out of the two fire trucks on the scene is the front end of one pumper. Everything else is gone.
And about 12:30 this afternoon, a contingent of firefighters rolled in. Their job was the hardest one today, to bring out the remains of six of their friends.
Everything was pretty much leveled within probably a 100-yard radius.
Victor Zinn is a retired Kansas City homicide detective. He was at the scene that day.
In addition to the bomb squad, they also had cadaver dogs looking for individuals that may have been blown apart.
Six firefighters died in the explosions. The youngest was 31, the oldest 57. It was the worst tragedy in the history of the Kansas City Fire Department.
This was a huge, huge crime that took place, and there was going to be a lot of time and effort put into finding the right people that did it.
9 years later, five people were convicted, not for murder, but for aiding and abetting arson that led to the deaths of the firefighters. A federal judge sentenced them to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But from the beginning, the case was troubled. First, there was no physical evidence linking the suspects to the crime scene, and there was conflicting testimony, a lot of it from convicted felons and jailhouse informants. To this day, the four surviving defendants maintain their innocence, and they're not alone.
In my opinion, the wrong people are in jail for this particular crime.
The youngest defendant was Brian Shepard. Brian was just 17 at the time of the explosions, and it turns out his age was really important. A few years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole was unconstitutional for a minor. And that's just the type of sentence Brian received. So after nearly three decades behind bars, he suddenly had a shot at freedom. Reveal's Jenna Welch spent a year digging into Brian's case together with our partner, Kansas City Public Television. And a lot's happened since we first reported the story. Jenna begins with a phone call.
Receiving a call from
Brian Shepard,
an inmate at CCA Leavenworth Detention Center.
Whenever Brian reaches out from federal prison, our calls are monitored, and we're only able to talk for 15 minutes at a time. So if you want to get to the bottom of his story, it takes a lot of phone calls. This call was just over a year ago.
I realized today was the 29th of November, and
Brian tells me on this day, he thinks about the firefighters and their families.
And just hard to believe that it's been 28 years today that crime happened. You know, it's
the day your life changed forever. It's got to be hard.
It's hard sitting in here for all these years. I've been locked up for 20 plus years now. Anybody who digs into this case and starts reading about it and investigating, they come to the same conclusion. Something's not right with this case, you know. If we can maintain our innocence for all these years and stand up and fight and, you know, never waver, something's got to be wrong.
Brian has always told me, and anyone else who would listen, that he was home asleep on the night of the explosions. He was living with his parents in a place called Marlborough, a working-class neighborhood just a mile from the construction site. The other defendants were also from Marlborough, his uncles Frank and Skip, Skip's girlfriend Darlene Edwards, and Brian's friend, Richard Brown. Brian's teenage years were wild. Lots of drugs, drinking, fights, and brushes with the law. During the time the police were investigating the explosions, Brian was locked up for stealing a bicycle and violating probation.
Brian Shepherd is in jail already.
That's when local media started reporting he was a suspect in the firefighter's case.
He was scheduled to be released next week, but investigators and prosecutors will reportedly charge him with arson and murder before he walks.
The evidence against Brian came from two men he'd met in jail. They told police he'd bragged about starting the fires. Based on their testimony, the state of Missouri indicted Brian on 6 counts of murder. But within a couple of months, the case fell apart. One of the informants, a man named John Driver, said on television he'd lied to the police.
98% was made up, was fictitious.
Driver said the police wanted a conviction badly and promised to reduce his jail sentence.
The statement was made by the police officers was someone's going to have to burn for this. They are getting a lot of pressure down to convict someone on this charge.
Brian Shepherd had not been in jail that long when the prosecutors had to drop the charges.
Tom Jackman covers crime and courts for the Washington Post. Back then, he was a young reporter with the Kansas City Times.
They dismissed 6 murder charges against the guy they had thought had killed the firefighters. This was a gigantic letdown for the entire city. Suddenly, they had nothing. They had nobody. They were back to square zero.
So in December of 1989, Brian Shepherd was a free man, but he was still in the media spotlight.
Shepherd, in an exclusive television interview, maintains he's not capable of the crime. But he says since his name has been associated with the explosion, his life has been scarred.
I had a friend of mine who looks kind of like me. He got jumped down on Westport by, I think it was a couple firefighters, jumped him, beat him up because they thought he was me.
Brian talks a lot about this moment in his life, as if it was twilight, just before the light went out. On one hand, his attorney told him his troubles were over.
He told us nothing's going to happen. They're not going to charge you with the thing anymore. We've proven their witnesses were lying, so just move forward with your life.
The police had dropped the charges, but Brian was still under suspicion.
The people hadn't changed, but the way they looked at me had. I could see it in their eyes, you know. I could see it in the way they act around me.
He remembers seeing investigators combing Marlborough for evidence.
You know, I might as well have been walking around with a sign on my chest or a bullseye or something.
An array of law enforcement was trying to crack the firefighters' case. Local police, the FBI, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF. They were part of an arson task force, and Fire Captain Joe Galletti was the chair. The men who died were his friends, his brothers. Joe firmly believed Brian Shepherd and the others set the fires that triggered the explosions.
All the time, we knew what family of persons did the crime. All we needed was a little evidence.
Just a little evidence. But remember, any physical evidence was blown to smithereens, and no eyewitnesses had turned up. But Joe figured someone out there must know something. So his team set up a hotline for tips and plastered reward posters across Kansas City.
And we made signs 30-foot long and 12-foot high, and we put them on all the bridges. And I made it big enough that if you could drive by at 55 miles an hour, you could read it.
Joe worked with an ATF agent named David True. They brought the case to the attention of the TV show Unsolved Mysteries. This was 6 years after Brian Shepard's first case was dismissed.
Today the case remains Kansas City's most notorious unsolved crime.
The show aired in February 1995.
There is currently a $50,000 reward being offered in this case. If you have any information, please contact the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, or call our toll-free number. Remember, you need not give your name.
Joe Galletti says as soon as the program ended,
the telephone started ringing. We had over 300 leads that night, and things started happening.
Leads were coming in from ordinary citizens. They were also coming in from jails and prisons.
I don't think you could get on the phone for 3 days. There's so many criminals calling.
Alan Bethard is from Marlborough, and he grew up with Brian Shepard. I spoke with him at a Missouri State prison where he's serving time on drug charges. Alan's been in and out of prison over the years for dealing drugs and robbery. In fact, he was here in 1995 and remembers prison staff putting up reward posters and encouraging inmates to call into the tip hotline.
Never once have I seen any kind of help being requested from inside the Department of Corrections. They've never done anything like that.
Alan says he didn't call in. Investigators came to him with an offer.
Testify at the grand jury hearing. We'll let you out of prison. Testify at the trial and help get a conviction, and we'll assure you the $50,000 reward. We'll put you in the witness protection program. We'll send you anywhere in the United States you want to go.
Alan says investigators wanted him to confirm his story. One of Alan's friends had told the police that he and Alan together had seen Brian Shepard and others speeding away from the construction site just after the explosions. But Alan says he was at home that night and told investigators the story wasn't true. He says that's when they came after him.
They personally came at me, threatened to put me in jail for withholding evidence, threatened to take my girlfriend's daughter for being an unfit mother and set my bond at $1 million, set my trial date back for 3 years, even though they know they didn't have anything on me. These guys are threatening to take your life away from you.
Alan still refused to cooperate. At the time, he was facing charges for stealing a car that he'd driven across the state line. The federal prosecutor in the firefighter's case had the charges upgraded. Suddenly, Alan was facing a long sentence in federal prison unless he cooperated.
I would have been a good witness against Brian, with me being so close to him, me being such good friends with him.
But just at that point, the judge in the case intervened. He scolded the government for pressuring Alan to testify. Reporter Mike McGraw spent years investigating the firefighter's case for Kansas City Public Television and the Kansas City Star. He's interviewed Alan many times.
During the hearing in which Alan Bethard's stolen car case was taken from state court to federal court, the judge turned to Bethard and he said, "Look, I'm sure the Federal Sentencing Commission would never, never in their wildest dreams anticipate that the government would pull something like this."
Then the judge turned to the federal prosecutor and said,
"You're just prosecuting this guy because he won't tell you the story that you want him to tell." He even called the prosecutor out again and said, "Do you think maybe that Alan is telling the truth and your witness could be the one that's lying?"
Instead of prison time, the judge gave Alan probation.
Prosecutors aren't giving up. They're still on the hunt for people who will testify against Brian Shepard.
They're coming straight out of jails, out of Missouri or Kansas. And we'd look at our attorneys and be like, "This person's up there testifying against me? I don't even know who this person is."
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.